Hello, hello, and welcome to a special broadcast. My name is Abril Sawarsa Rivera, and I'm here with Curtis Holt Robinson and Tara Laliparvar, who are two UBC students and the co-founders of Skyward Financial, which is a financial literacy initiative that you're going to hear a lot more about. Today, we are here to talk all about shmoney. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Curtis and Tara, thank you so much for being with me today.
Hello, it's an honor to be here.
Hello. Yeah, this is very... I'm very excited. This is very cool.
I thought we could start today's conversation by talking a little bit about something that you spent some money on in the last few days or weeks that brought you a little bit of joy or delight or fulfillment, kind of rejecting that idea of having guilty pleasures and feeling like, you know, I can spend money on things that do bring me happiness.
Yeah. I'll start. I think so it was my birthday on a Saturday. And it was really fun. We did a whole day plan. We went to Surrey, saw my parents. But at the end of the night, we can spend the money on it. And we went to an Abbotsford Canucks game. So not the Vancouver Canucks. A little too pricey for us right now, but the Abbotsford Canucks was a super fun time. Parking's, you know, a little expensive. Food and drink is a little expensive too. But, you know, it was just well worth it. And we really enjoyed our time. They won too, so that's a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a very good time. But I was going to say something a little bit more superficial. I bought a couple candles the other day. And that made me feel really good. If I have things smelling good and fresh, it's the little things, I think, that really, really make a difference in your day.
Yeah. So the two of you work as financial advisors and you have the credentialization for that. And what do you say to the question of, or the idea that money can't buy you happiness? What is your immediate response to a statement like that?
I think, like, how I always view money is it's not an ends, it's always, like, a means, mm-hmm. right? So even though we're helping people start off investing and saving and budgeting and paying off debt and all that sort of stuff, it's never the end resort. Of course, money makes you comfortable and, you know, you have to pay your rent, you have to afford groceries and stuff like that. But, you know, if your end goal is to just chase more and more money, that's not going to bring you happiness. That's gonna actually suck. You know, you're not going to be happy with that at all. So use it as a means. Use it to buy experiences and buy time with friends and gifts and stuff like that. But it's essential, but it's not everything.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about Skyward Financial, which is your baby, this passion project that the two of you started. Can you tell me a little bit more about it and the story behind it?
Yeah, so it's been a little bit over 2 years now since we started this. And really the way it came about was a pretty organic story. Curtis and I were just sitting together and we were thinking about our future and how, you know, something like retirement is such a long ways away for us, but we were thinking about how we're planning for all of these things now when we're still in our 20s and we know we're going to be okay. We know, you know, you're going to graduate, you're going to get a better job and things are on the up and up. But then we thought to ourselves, is anybody else in our life going to be able to do that? Just looking at our friends and the people around us, the people that we're growing with currently, are they going to be able to be in the same boat? Why would we gatekeep the knowledge that we have right now about acting for your future in a very well-informed and no jargon way? And so from that came this feeling of a bit of like a moral responsibility for us to do everything we can to spread this to the people that are closest to us and by extension, the people that are closest to them. Mm. And because at that time we noticed that financial literacy is pretty much a put on the back burner, especially, we all know that it's not very much a priority in schools, But generally, you're just expected to figure it out yourself. And there seems to be a lot of people out there who will try to take advantage of that and teach you in a way that's going to advantage them the most.
And yeah, just to add on to that, when we started, I already worked a couple years in the financial industry. I worked for a company that I didn't like working for, and I saw some practices that they were doing that I'm like, how can you treat people like that? How can you process them like they're only, you know, there's dollar signs above their head? And I looked at that and I told Tara about it, and we just both in unison sort of said, well, you know, if the industry's flawed, why don't we just create our own thing?
Well, yeah, because the alternative at the time, Curtis was debating leaving that work. And I was like, you know, no, it makes sense. You should never work with a philosophy or under a philosophy that you don't feel aligned with and you don't believe in. But we believe in the actual work itself. So it would be such a shame for us to just give up on this and completely switch careers and switch gears. And so it was actually a bit of like a spitballing idea. We were like, why don't we do our own thing? Curtis said that, and I was like, that's really funny. And he was like, no, I'm serious. And literally that's how it started.
Wow, and was it a pandemic project?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Oh, it really was. Yeah. I was not even in the country at the time for the pandemic. I was back home with my parents. And so we were on a Zoom call. Like, that's how it happened, actually.
We were on FaceTime and we both had that idea. And then the next, and we, so we incorporated Skyward Financial in March of 2021. So 2 years ago. And we were busy making our online education sessions, like perfecting these PowerPoints, but we were halfway across.
And they're beautiful. I've taken the workshops.
Thank you.
Those are some very clean, beautifully designed PowerPoints.
Oh, I appreciate that. They are like, the design is one thing, but the content of it, we are constantly revising it. Because as you do more sessions with people, and by the way, what we do is we run these education sessions where we cover the basics of finance in very accessible language and like illustrations and graphics. And what we do is we learn more and more about how people learn these things and how they understand these concepts as we have more sessions with people. And so we're constantly revising how we communicate or teach a particular concept. So over time, it's had its evolution, and now it's reached its like final, not final, but it's like so much better than what it was before.
Right.
And we feel like it's gotten to a point where it is the best way to teach these particular concepts, at least for people who are more visual learners. But yeah, it's been a process for sure.
I think a lot about what it would have been like to have a financial literacy course in middle school or high school. And like you're saying, this is something that there is so clearly, there's a lack there. And so people come into their 20s and they're money anxious and they don't know what to do. And they're worried about their future, where in reality, there's plenty of time. What kinds of advice do you offer to those kinds of people that walk into your sessions?
Yeah, there's been a couple clients that come to mind when I think about that. You know, we've had a whole range of clients. A lot of people come for the education sessions. A lot of those are university students. You know, Tara and I are finishing up our bachelor's degrees at UBC. But we also have a bunch of clients that are young families or people just getting into the workforce, like really, really diverse, and it's incredible. But the people that have been money anxious, you know, we take them through the education sessions, and only after the education do we sort of spill out and pour out all the personal qualms and worries and issues. And we give, you know, we give an hour to all of our sessions, whether or not we need an hour, just so we can give the right amount of time. And there's been times I've been on calls for 2 hours hearing about how somebody, you know, seemingly can't pay off their debts, or they want to afford a house, but you know, that's only a dream, it seems. And what we do is I like to call it like analytical optimism. I think I want to coin that, where we show them, you know, hey, here are some calculations about your current budget and what the budget could be while still being comfortable, still being kind to yourself. It works, you know. A lot of people just sort of dig themselves into a pit where, oh no, my habits and my way of life will always be this way. But no,
you a little bit of learned helplessness there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, I think so.
I resonate with that.
Right, but yeah. you can totally have a change of perspective and actually a comfortable life, but still prioritizing your future to the degree you want it to be prioritized to, right? So yeah, there. You know, I got asked a question a long time ago. Are we doomed financially? And I say no. You know, we're gonna be okay. It's tough. I'm not saying it's easy, but you know, the numbers don't lie, and yeah, that's all we got to say. This isn't some fake sort of thing we're selling. It's true. You're going to be fine.
Do you have any, what's your approach when you have people who come in and they're just full of worry and doubt?
I think that it's good to, I try to reassure people that you are not alone in feeling the way that you do, and also it's not your fault, because we just have not prioritized this type of education and we still don't. And so it's not your fault that you're jumping into the real world. You know, you've just finished either high school or you just got out of college, and now all of a sudden you are expected to know all of these things. And it seems to be an industry where nobody likes to talk about not knowing things. It's a little bit intimidating, and people like to kind of flaunt that they have that knowledge, and kind of you get looked down upon if you don't really know what you're doing. And we have so many people that feel that way. We felt that way before too. But I think another thing that kind of worsens that is we all have access to the internet. Like, we can all Google things. But it's so difficult to discriminate all of that information. It's too much. And the average person doesn't have the time or the energy to parse through and evaluate what's true and what's not true. It's way too much. So we've done that for them. And what we've honestly noticed is that when people finish the education sessions, when they feel like they're no longer in the dark, that anxiety over time starts to simmer away, especially with younger clients, because they have so much time and they're still so young. You still have, you know, decades before you're going to need to retire and you're going to need these savings. And mathematically speaking, with like compounding and all these basic concepts, you're not doomed at all. Like, we actually do this little calculation where we show you, like Curtis said, analytic optimism. We show you mathematically how you're going to be fine. It's about building habits and learning early on how to manage your money.
Yeah, and something I remember is a very simple habit that you talked about in your education session. Curtis, I wonder if you could talk about it. It was the $25 a week.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people I know, you know, friends and people close to me, I know that they, you know, go out to eat maybe more often than they should. I mean, we're all guilty of that, right? But let's say that instead of going out every single night of the week for an outdoor, outside dinner, you just stay home one day, maybe cook yourself a nice meal, and you save that $25 and you put it in, say, a TFSA, a tax-free savings account. So that's an investment account that anybody over the age of 19 can open. You can invest in whatever you want to invest in. But let's say that you want to set up your future really well, maybe say your retirement. If a 20-year-old, around 20, puts away $25 a week, just builds that habit, and does that for the rest of their life, in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s, in their 60s, only 25 bucks a week, you have over $2 million when you retire. That's put into account that grows tax-free every year, and put into an account that you can withdraw that money tax-free each year. Now, this is based off, you know, higher risk investment. We can talk about what risk means, but we're not, you know, we're not gambling money away. That's, you know, If you want to gamble your money, go to a casino. That is quicker. But we're putting it in something that's reliable, that's going to grow steadily alongside you throughout the years. And you can be well off by just having the most minor discipline for yourself, especially if you're young.
Yeah, I like that. Advocating for minor discipline. You talked a little bit about risk, and I thought it would be great for us to talk a little bit about the nitty-gritty of some misconceptions that people have surrounding banking and saving. And something that we've spoken about is when you go into a bank and you're interested in investing, they'll offer you either a high-risk savings account or a low-risk savings account. What does that mean for people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, so I just want to talk to the savings account versus the investment account sort of dynamic. So a savings account is what probably everybody has. A savings account is opened by your bank. Maybe it's a bank that your parents use, so it's just, it's just easier to open it that way. But a savings account is basically money you put there, and it might grow at a rate of, 1%, maybe that if you're lucky. Its main goal is to save for sort of the short term, any bills you have coming up, maybe a goal you're trying to save up for in the next couple months. And then you have what's called a checking account. And a checking account doesn't give you any growth, but you can transact from that account day to day. But it doesn't grow your money, so you shouldn't try to save up your money there. But if you want to open something longer than, say, the next 6 months, the next year, you can look towards investment accounts and actually investing your money. Do you want to talk about
that? That's a huge misconception. It's that the term savings account is very misleading. It's not intended or designed for you to save, put your life savings in there. That's really not what it's for. What it is for is, like Curtis said, very, very short-term goals, or even putting money aside for an emergency, just like a fund that you can access at any point if anything happens. It's basically just a safety box that is going to give you a very, very small amount of return, just so it, covers a little bit of the rate of inflation or something like that. It is not intended to become your retirement fund in any way. But one thing that most people don't know is that the way you do save up for the future and for the big goals like a house or a vacation or a car, that's when you have to do something called investing. And it's not that scary. And it doesn't always mean having to do market research and buying stocks and like following all these different indices and creating a portfolio. You don't have to do that. If you want, you can, if you're well-versed and educated. But that's the job of people who spent years studying that field, and that's their job to help you do that. And that's all investing is. It's typically taking baskets or big bunches of lots of different investments in stocks and bonds and spreading your money across all those different things. It's like you don't put all your eggs into one basket of one stock. Like, say you don't just go buy Apple stocks. You can, but that's not what typically you're supposed to do. You diversify your money and you spread it across lots of different investments, and that's what's going to steadily grow over time with you. But what really differentiates these different baskets, so to speak, is that risk level that you talked about. When your money is diversified and you're not putting it into one single stock, risk doesn't actually mean loss, contrary to what most people think. If somebody at the bank asks you, do you prefer low risk or high risk? Well, you're going to say low risk. Nobody wants to lose their money. Who in their right mind would want to lose their money?
It's misleading.
Yeah, it's misleading because that's not really what it means. And I think it's a disservice to clients if that's not explained to them. Risk really just means fluctuations in that growth rate. So it means that over the next 10 years, 1 year it might be lower, 1 year it might be higher, 1 year it might even be negative. But over the average of the next, 10 or 15 years, it'll average to a certain amount. And if something is higher risk, it just means it bumps up and down a lot more frequently. But at the end, it grows more. Something that is low risk, it stays more stable, but ultimately it'll grow less over time.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, that this whole bumpiness, these fluctuations. So if you have something this fluctuation of low, medium, high risk, it really depends on how long you want to invest for. Like, let's say that you want to save up for the next 2 years. Maybe you want to go to Cancun. That'd be a nice sort of goal to save up for. I would want to, you know, advise you to put it in something called a low risk, say, mutual fund, a low risk ETF, an investment that's not going to have a lot of bumps. Right? If you have less time, we should try for more security, more safety, more surety of your money. But if you have, like, let's say the retirement example, 40-something years to let that money grow, you know, well, you can take on those fluctuations. You can take on those highs and lows because the average long-term is way higher than the others will be. And you might get worried, oh, no, today it went down and tomorrow it went down. You don't need it for 40 years. You're going to be okay. And we have to just reassure people. This is a sort of emotional thing. If you're buying a house, if you're investing your money, it's an emotional thing. But we always try to anchor it back into the logic and rationality of, hey, this is what has been for the entire past of the investment cycles, let's say. And yeah, you can have trust in these numbers that we're giving you. It seems scary, but if you equip yourself with the right education and the right knowledge, it doesn't have to feel so bad.
Yeah, there's something very grounding about the work that the both of you do, where you are providing reassurance and affirming for people. You are doing something for your future self. You're doing something that in 40 years' time, you will be a lot more stable because of it. I wanted to ask about, It's really tricky at this point in time because what you mentioned, Tara, about the not knowing and how scary that can be and often how we are comparing ourselves to others. I wonder if either of you have brushed up against any challenges as financial advisors in your 20-somethings to do with imposter syndrome or ever feeling any kinds of challenges in this role.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of challenges, both, you know, practically with doing the work and making sure that you are doing the absolute best that you can for your clients. You know, that's, of course, has its place, but also on a personal level, just taking the leap to do something like this, balancing it with school and just trying to be confident in the fact that, you know, you're doing it. It's okay. You don't need to compare yourself to other people and feel like you are kind of, you know, that classic imposter syndrome. That is definitely something that I struggle with, and I'm doing everything I can to try to resolve, but it's really hard. Like, it's really difficult to, especially because we're so young and we know that we know what we're doing. We know that we know what we're talking about, but it's difficult to have confidence in your own abilities and just, yeah, it's, I feel like it's something that is, can be experienced no matter what industry you're in. Yeah. It really doesn't even matter.
And I also feel like there's a certain level of strength in that because you work with 20-somethings, you might be feeling that same level of self-doubt or of questioning. Curtis, I know that you have a philosophy when it comes to working with clients, and the both of you do, about being down-to-earth and accessible. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so just a quick overview of all this stuff about Skyward Financial. So, yeah, Tara and I incorporated in March 2021, and really what we're trying to do is make, you know, this education and also the service of investing and saving and maybe insurance, all this stuff, as accessible as possible. So we've created three online education sessions that we deliver for free. You know, you'll see either Tara or me, whoever you want, really. And we teach you and we take you through these presentations and these PowerPoints. And maybe you don't want that. Maybe you just want an open dialogue, and we can have that too. But we always focus on, hey, who are you as the client, as the person before us, and how can we cater our service to suit you, right? You might have great education and great knowledge of everything. Maybe there's, you know, it's a little rough around the edges, but we can iron that out and then we can help you there. Maybe you're someone who has no background in anything finance ever. Before my education, I was definitely that. My parents were well-meaning, but they didn't know what they were talking about coming to saving and budgeting. So, you know, we work at whatever pace people are comfortable with. That online component is super nice, too. People can learn from the comfort of their own home. There's no, like, corporate office you have to go to.
So unintimidating.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's, like, one of the main things, though. It's... We don't sit there with, you know, a suit and a tie and a blazer and sit across a giant desk from you and make you feel small, because that's typically what happens. And we actually, to speak about the challenges, one of the challenges is trying to break out of that image that is a financial advisor. It is not it's an outdated look. And I think it really needs to start to change, and we're doing everything we can to just be a person and not somebody who's going to make you feel bad about your knowledge level or your money. Like, we really just try to be accessible to people and be open with them. And if somebody is completely in the dark about anything, we don't, you know, start using big words to intimidate them and assert our authority and make them just be like, okay, you know what you're doing, you just take control of everything. No, we want to make sure that you are educated enough that you can play a part in making the decision about your finances, and that you know what's happening every single step of the way. Even if people choose not to work with us, at least we know that now they're going out there and they aren't going to be fooled by anything, because they are going to sit across from that, you know, a big man in the suit, and they're not going to be taken advantage of because they know exactly what's going on.
Oh, I admire that. We are coming close to the end of our time together. I wanted to ask a question that might be on listeners' minds as they're tuning in, and it's that you're doing such great work and you're offering these complimentary sessions to people. What is the catch? How do you get compensated for the work that you do, and how do financial advisors in general get compensated?
Yeah, that's definitely the main question we get. You know, we offer free education and we offer free planning, so we help you budget, we help you invest, and all that stuff is free, but what's the catch? So advisors across the board get paid in certain ways. The main way advisors get compensated is they're on commission. So what that means is, let's say that you have some money, maybe you saved it up, maybe, you know, whatever, you have some money and you want to invest it. Okay, that's a noble task. You go to an advisor, maybe at a bank or a credit union, and you want to invest, let's say, $10,000 into your TFSA, nice round number. That advisor will not invest $10,000. That advisor will take maybe a 3% cut of whatever that grand total is, and they will invest the rest. So right away, with, say, a commission-based approach, you're in the negative. You know, you're in -3, -2% right away. That's sort of tough. Your money's not able to be grown. But what we've done is we've adopted and created and used a newer compensation structure. We're fee-based advisors. So instead of money being paid up front, you know, the advisor and commission base is just happy that they walked in somebody's money, let's say. They don't have to work for you. They already got paid. But with fee-based advising, what we do is we charge a lower compensation for assets under management, for basically how much money there is. We say about, you know, 1% with all of our clients. We're not doing it really for the money. But we get paid not when you invest, but progressively throughout the year. So if we aren't working hard for you, your money's not working hard for you, then we lose out too. Even if we were the greediest people alive, it would be in our best interest to work as hard for you as possible. Really, the state of financial advising that favors commission-based really doesn't allow for that that real connection and that real service that the advisor should provide.
An ongoing relationship, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. And I'd just like to add that the incentive to put your client's interests first is built into the way this fee structure works. Like Curtis said, we will only theoretically make more money if we manage your money well and it grows. If we don't, then we're not going to be compensated. So it's not about sales, unlike commissions, because that model is very similar to, say, real estate. You know, you make a sale and then you make a commission. It doesn't work like that. And the good news is that actually that's starting to be more and more favored by the regulators of the industry. They have realized how much better that is for both advisors and, more importantly, the clients. And so they're really trying to push new and upcoming advisors in the industry to adopt this new model because it's better for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the main thing, though, is that we have made it a point to include a really big segment in our sessions on this because we think it's so important to be transparent about just generally how does the industry work? Like, how does a person who calls themselves a financial advisor, how do they pay the bills? So, we definitely do make it a point to explain that in the sessions as well. We think that's one of the most important things.
And just to add on to that, you know, in a world of like a bunch of hidden fees and a bunch of, you know, God knows how many hidden fees there are with your bank or whatever, wherever you go, it's really important that we have that disclosure. A lot of advisors I've known in the past have not been transparent about that. The question comes up, hey, how do you get compensated? Oh, just don't worry about that. But no, you know, all of our cards are here. You know, we don't hide anything. We don't want to hide anything. All the information is on our website or in our education sessions. And we get questions all the time, and we're always more than happy to share that stuff. And with the fee-based structure, like you said, Abril, it's not that we're trying to sell people on a certain investment and lock them in and forget about them. What we're doing is we're really offering and selling, I guess you could say, like a lifelong relationship, a lifelong friendship with clients. I mean, there's so many clients I know and I talk with all the time that are my friend before they're my client, even if they've come to me first as a client, right? I've had incredible conversations with people, and just back to our philosophy, yeah, the best client we can imagine is let's meet up for coffee, say an hour, let's talk about finance for 10 minutes, but then let's talk about, you know, whatever, life for the next 50. That's really what we're offering here, and it's just been incredible so far. We've only been doing it for 2 years, but who knows where it's going
to
go.
Yeah, it warms my heart to see the way that the both of you with this have continued to lead with honesty and humility and a lot of care. I want to close off with what is one thing for our listeners that you think they can take away if there's one message about money, about the way that they approach finances. What's one thing that you would advise?
Yeah, I would just say on the, do I go the philosophical route or do I go the practical route? I'll go the practical route. Maybe that blends into the philosophical. Purchases on food are very, very bad. Not to say you shouldn't eat out. Go for it, you know. Budget that stuff and eat to your heart's content. But the thing is, when you buy a meal, you eat it, you sort of forget that you even bought the meal in the first place. So, listen, if you're going to go out to eat, budget that stuff beforehand so you're not blindsided. You know, if you buy a shirt, you can see the shirt, you know. You remember the purchase. But just be careful about food and drink and stuff like that. That can be a real drain on your finances. So take that practical wisdom. I think that's good.
I'm so guilty of that. My little treats throughout the day.
Oh, yeah. And just to say, like, so are we. Like, we are not perfect by any means. Oftentimes, like, in the evenings, I'll just look at Curtis, like, in a side eye, and then he'll look back at me, and I'm like, I don't want to cook tonight. And he's like, okay, let's do it. And then we'll order in. And like, so we're all guilty of it. Yeah. It's not, nobody's perfect, but it's about building the right habits.
Yeah. That's some sage advice. Tara, anything from you?
I think just more philosophically, if you're really anxious And just thinking about even looking at your bank account or wanting to even budget is so daunting and terrifying. It's okay. You're not alone. So many people feel that way. And if you just spend a little bit of time digging, you'll be able to find the right resources. We're one of those resources, and we will try to make ourselves available for people to try to ease that anxiety. But I just really want people out there who feel that way and feel anxious about money to know that they're not alone, and that personally, I know how that feels. I knew how that felt, and there are ways to pull you out of that. You don't have to always feel that way. I think that's the gist of it.
Oh, that felt like a breath of fresh air. How can people find you outside of this?
Yeah, so our website is skywardfinancial.org. That's where all of our information is, and you can reach out and book a session that way too. Our Instagram is skyward.financial. We post beautiful pictures, and Tara does beautiful creations and animation. She's very talented. And then on Facebook, we also have skyward.financial FB for that. So yeah, but the main place you can find us is our website, so skywardfinancial.org. And yeah, for those listening, we really hope to see you soon. And yeah, the world of finance doesn't have to be so scary. We're here to help.
Thank you guys so much for being with me.